But tonight, we are in Luke 14, and we're going to talk about this enemy of the home, excuses. And we're going to see some excuses and then see how they apply as we think about our homes. So we're in Luke chapter 14 in our Bibles, and we're going to start in verse 16, and we'll read down to verse 21. So I'm starting in verse 16. If you'll follow along and just follow as I read down to verse 21. Now, we're right in the middle of a narrative, as typically we are many times. But I think this is somewhat familiar to many of you, if not all of you. Verse 16 of Luke 14. Then said he unto them, a certain man made a great supper and bade many. And sent his servant, now watch this, at supper time. That's an important part of this. Sometimes maybe it doesn't jump out at people, but that's an important part of what he's saying here. At supper time, to say to them that were bidden, come. For all things are now ready. Let me back up for a moment so you follow. Look at verse 16. He bade many. And what implies there is this was already known. This isn't a surprise to any of them. And it's happening towards the evening, supper time. And now they're saying, okay, now's the time. Come. Verse 18. And they all with one consent began to make excuse. The first said unto him, I have bought a piece of ground, and I must needs go and see it. I pray thee, have me excused. And another said, I have bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I go to prove them. I pray thee, have me excused. Another said, I have married a wife, and therefore I cannot come. So that servant came and showed his lord these things. Then the master of the house, being angry. Now, when you see these teachings of Jesus, typically the master of the king is representative of the Lord. So when he says the master was angry, that means that this is the Lord's response to these excuses that people give him. He's not happy about it. Then the master of the home, the house, being angry, said to his servant, go out quickly into the streets and lanes of the city, and bring in hither the poor and the maimed and the halt and the blind. Now, there's a great salvation teaching in this. God is looking for souls, and it doesn't matter who they are. He's after the souls of men. And so if one person gives an excuse, he doesn't stop and doesn't throw up hands and say, well, no one wants it. He goes after someone else, as we should. And there's going to be a lot of people who aren't going to want the gospel, but we shouldn't stop, because if we go to 100 people and 100 people don't want the gospel, what should you do? Go to 101. Go to the next person. And so there's a lot of teaching in this, but we're going to look at it in the idea of the home. How does it apply that way? Well, let's back up for a moment, lay a little bit of foundation, and then we'll give you some application to the home here. Make an excuse in and of itself is not wrong. It's not wrong. If you ever have to make... Sorry, my nose keeps itching. What does that mean? Is there any superstition about that? I don't know. Maybe I'm like... I don't know. Like, ding, 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 ding. Like that. Make an excuse in and of itself is not wrong, as long as the excuse is a reasonable excuse. So we're not saying if you ever had to make an excuse, somehow you're not right with God. That's not what we're saying. The truth is, life can be and is messy. There is a messiness about life. And none of us are perfect. And so you take a messy life and you take the imperfection of man, things happen, and we have to say, sorry, it just didn't go the way I thought it would go. And sometimes we have to make excuses. That in itself is not the problem. As long as it's a reasonable excuse and you're not just trying to come up with a way of getting out of something you should be doing. But when the excuse is unreasonable or avoidable or constant, then there becomes a problem. I'll give you an example. And I was telling, me and Joe were talking about this the other day. So I had a one of the minivans I had back in, when would this be? Early 90s, somewhere between 90 and 95, because I was at Victory Baptist at the time. So someone had worked on the front, I think the brakes, pretty sure it was the brakes of the front of that van, and took the wheels off, did some brake work, put the wheels on. Now, I will tell you my fault. My fault, twofold. One fault is I didn't check the lug nuts after they were done. Second fault is I didn't check it even if they were tight then. In theory, you're supposed to check later after, 5,000 miles or something like that. And double check it. I didn't do either. I trust, but I didn't verify. Bad, bad, bad. Can you guess what's going to happen in this story? Any guesses? Any takers? What do you think is going to happen with one of those wheels? So we're pulling up into Victory. If you've never been to Victory, it won't make sense to you. But they have a back. At that time, they had a back parking lot. So you pulled up and you went around back. And so I pulled up and went around back, and my tire went this way. And like, boom! I was like, well, that's not how the car is supposed to be. And why is my tire going to the backfield? Come back! We need you! Okay, so it caused me not to fulfill responsibility because my car was down. I don't think anyone said, what's wrong with you? You're not right with God. Can't you just pick up the car and carry it? No, I cannot. Surprise, surprise. But you know what would be unreasonable? If the next week, I use the same excuse. And the third week, I use the same excuse. And the fourth week, I use the same excuse. Because I say, well, they all keep falling off. And someone said, did you ever think about checking? After the first one, did you think about checking the other three? And so they would. The first time, it is a reasonable excuse. But if it's happening every week another tire is falling off, people are going to say, this isn't really very reasonable at this point in time. Now, let me give you a couple of statements as we kind of work towards our main lessons here. If we make a commitment, then we should be responsible to keep that commitment. Now, watch the end of this. Even if it is harder to keep than what we thought it would be. And it's usually, this is when we get in trouble. We make a commitment and then all of a sudden, whoa, I didn't know it was going to be that hard. But you made a commitment. You made a commitment. Now, I know that you don't know, and I don't know everything that's going to be into this thing, but we're making a commitment and we're supposed to keep our commitments. Hard is really not a reason for go commitment. Now, it may mean that we might have to make some changes within reason, but we shouldn't just throw our hands up and say, well, that's harder than I thought. That's not being a very responsible person. So hold your place in Luke 14. Go with me to Psalms 15. Here's a good verse for us. And I don't know about you, but these verses, when I read these things, they convict me. I don't always like them. You know what I find out when I read the Bible? I find a lot of things I don't like. And if I wrote the Bible, I wouldn't put it in there. I would have said, if it's hard, don't do it. But that's not what God says. Which is good that He wrote it and I didn't, right? Psalms 15, look at verse 4. In whose eyes a vile person is contemned, but he honors them that fear the Lord. Now look at the end of this verse. He that sweareth to his own hurt and changeth not. In other words, just because it's hard, you don't give up on it. Now, let me just stop and say, If you make a commitment and you find out you got to violate Scripture to do it, well, that's the first half of the verse takes care of that. You got to honor the Lord. So if I make a commitment, it's always with the idea of, you know, my understanding that there's not a unbiblical procedure involved in this. If someone says, hey, can you do me a favor? Can you meet me at 12 at First Merit, at Huntington? I need you to pick me up. And I say, sure, I'll meet you at 12 and pick you up. But if you come running out in a ski mask with a gun, with a bag full of cash, I'm pulling out without you. I'm telling you, I didn't know that's what you were up to. Okay, so I'm just telling you ahead of time in case you're thinking that. So if we make a commitment, we're responsible to keep that commitment. Even if it's harder to keep than we thought it would be. Now, what happens is if you make a commitment and you find out, I don't know if I can do this now. Let me just stop for a moment, because I think we're all adults, we know what to do. If I make a commitment to Larry, and I'm going to do something, and I find out I can't do this, what is my responsibility in this? Who should I go to? I should go to Larry and say, sorry, Larry, I really want to do this. I don't know if I can do this. How can we make it happen? Because I'm telling you, I'm kind of pushing to my limit. I think people understand that. What people don't understand is you make a commitment, and then all of a sudden you don't do it, and you don't contact, you don't say anything, and they're sitting there, where are you? You told me something, and you're not here. And you didn't tell me. And I have no idea what's happening. That is what gets us in trouble in any area, and we're going to make some application to the home in a moment. Still, we're in a broad category here. We haven't got specific to the home. So if there's a problem, then we should go to them and explain, not just make an excuse for not doing it. Now, let's get a little bit more specific. This is a problem that's happening in our text. There are unreasonable excuses for not fulfilling their commitment. Now, on the surface, it may not seem that way, but if you think about what they're saying, none of their excuses really hold water. They had already been invited. They were already committed to attend. So the servants are being sent out to bring them in. Their excuses are going to bring their master, and in this case, as we think about the Lord, to anger because their excuses were unreasonable. He saw right through them. So the question for us tonight is, when we think about our homes and excuses we make for not fulfilling our responsibilities inside our homes, the question for us is the Lord upset with us over our excuses and not fulfilling our responsibilities? So we're going to go now and look at our text, and we're going to look at them three different ways, because there's three different excuses, and make some application as we think about our homes and see how we can be unreasonable in our excuses for not fulfilling our responsibilities inside our homes. Not being the husband we should be, not being the mom we should be, not being a child we should be, not being a parent we should be, or whatever other responsibility there may be inside that home. So let's go look at verse 18. Let's look at the first excuse. And they all with one consent began to make excuse. The first said unto him, I bought a piece of ground, I must needs go and see it. I pray thee have me excused. So here's number one. Having the wrong priority is an unreasonable excuse. Just because your priority is wrong doesn't excuse you from your responsibility. His need, here in verse 18, his need to go and see it was based on his priority of watches, of wanting to see it. So let's just say for a moment, let's say Chloe buys a, and this is the field she just bought. Okay, so where is Chloe's field? Right here. Tomorrow, where is Chloe's field? Right here. Next week, where is Chloe's field? Right here. The field isn't going to move. Is there any reason he can't do it another? He's already made this commitment. Why do you have to go do it right now? The field isn't going anywhere. It's because he had a different priority. His priority was what he wanted, not what he was supposed to do. I know what I'm supposed to do, but here's what I want to do. And often we fail in our responsibilities because we're prioritizing what I want to do in my home versus what I'm supposed to do in my home. And that wrong priority, we may use it as an excuse, but the Lord sees through it and says, no, that's an unreasonable excuse. So what does that mean for us? Well, we should prioritize our commitments over our desires. Add a little to it, and then we'll get to some explanation. Doing what you want to do rather than what you should do will require a lot of unreasonable excuses to justify your actions. You're going to have to do a lot of excuses if you're going to live your life based on what you want versus what you should. So if we think about inside of a home, there are the hard things and there's the fun things. And I'm not saying you can't have any fun things to do in your home, because sometimes when I get on a tangent like this, people only listen to half of what I'm saying. Okay, I'm going to focus on the hard thing because that's really what we've got. This is the direction we're going. There's nothing wrong with doing fun things. I'm not saying everything in life has to be hard and difficult and boring and terrible. What I'm saying is you can't only just do the fun things and never do the hard thing. So when you think about our responsibility, we may be able to do both the hard thing and the fun thing. We may be able to do both of them. But usually the hard thing will require priority over the fun thing, or the hard thing will never get done. If this is the hard thing, and I don't really want to do it, so I'm going to spend all my time doing the fun thing and never do the hard thing, and I say, well, oops, I ran out of time. You didn't really run out of time. You just prioritized the wrong thing. You did what you wanted instead of what you're supposed to do. Often we'll use that excuse, a lack of time, as an excuse for not getting something done, when rather what we got plenty done, but it wasn't what we're supposed to do. The truth is we prioritize what we wanted to do, whatever we're supposed to do. So you're looking very nice, so let me agitate you for a moment. Ready? Here's the hard thing, cleaning house. Here's the easy, fun thing, watch TV. Now, if I prioritize the easy, fun thing over the hard thing, the result is the house is a mess. Now, here's what someone will say. Well, I didn't have time. Well, you had time. You spent it all watching TV. Or, watch this. The hard thing is to go to work. The easy thing is to call off and stay home. Now, what's the result? Well, I mean, I don't know. In the world we live in, who knows what the result is today. But here's what it's supposed to be. Okay, the hard thing is to get up in the morning. I've had jobs that I've hated to go to. Have you ever had a job you hated to go to? No current jobs. I've had jobs I've hated to go to. Well, I just absolutely never wanted to go back. So why did I do it? Because they didn't pay me unless I showed up. So it was a hard thing. Now, let me tell you what I wanted to do. I wanted to, hey, boss man, I'm not feeling well. And he'd say, You haven't felt well in 2 weeks. Don't worry about coming back. That's how it's supposed to work. If you don't show up, you don't have a job anymore. And I know today it doesn't seem to work that way as much as it should. So the hard thing is to go to work. The easy thing is to call off and stay home. The result is you lose your job. And the false excuse, well, it just wasn't for me. You're right, it was work, and you don't want to do work. I guess that's not for you. I'll give you another example. The hard thing at home is discipline children. It's a hard thing. If you love your children, you don't really like to discipline them because you love them. You hate to see that look in their face when they're getting in trouble. You'd rather just go get ice cream. That's the fun thing. Every parent, I'm assuming, loves to go get ice cream. But that doesn't always fix the problem. So sometimes you got to do the hard thing and not just the easy thing. Or the result is children never learn any character about what to do and doing right and following rules. And the false excuse often is, well, I'm just going to love them into obedience. You're not going to love them into obedience. God didn't love you into obedience. Now, God sacrificed for you through love. But let me tell you why you got saved. You didn't get saved because Jesus loves you. You got saved because you didn't want to go to hell. And God said, I'm going to send you to hell. Because you broke my rules. And you said, Lord, is there any way out? Yes, I'm going to extend grace through Calvary. Same thing is true for children. Should we love them? Yes. Should we be kind and all that? Yes, at least once in their life. Yes, we should love them and be kind to them. Okay, but we can't use that as an excuse. We're never trying to teach them discipline and character and what we need to teach them. So let me hit this maybe once more. If you're making excuses for not fulfilling your commitment because you're prioritizing the wrong things in your life, then your excuses are unreasonable. Now watch this, and will not be accepted by the Lord. People may not fuss with you. They'll just say, okay, whatever. But the Lord sees through it. You can't fool the Lord. He knows you're prioritizing the wrong thing. Let's go back to Luke. Let's look at the second excuse. Okay, so the first excuse is, I got to go check my land. Wait a minute. You made a commitment to come to this supper. You already said you would do that. That's the right thing to do. Your land's not going anywhere. The field's going to be there tomorrow. You don't have to do it now. You can do what you're committed to do and still later take care of the... No, this is... And what they're prioritizing, this is what they really want to do, and that's why they're trying to make an excuse. And this master saw through it. That brings us to verse 19, the second excuse. Another said, I have bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I go to prove them. I pray thee have me excused. Now on the surface, it sounds like, okay, yeah, but the master, again, sees right through it. So number two, here's another problem. Lack of planning and schedule is an unreasonable excuse. Now these kind of go hand in hand, these three things, but there are different parts of it. So I guess if you prioritize it, you should plan and schedule, but that may not be true. Lack of planning and schedule is an unreasonable excuse. Again, I agree. Life does not always work the way you plan. You can have the greatest plans in the world. Wake up in the morning, have this great plan for the day. And within the first hour, there goes the plan, and here comes life. Okay, I understand. Life happens. I'm not trying to be so foolish as to think that you can perfectly schedule a day and force everything to go the way you want. I wish that's true. That's not true. So life doesn't always work out as we plan. But when we, now watch this, when we fail to plan what we clearly know that we got to do, that's coming our way, and we refuse to do any planning or schedule, that's our fault. When you put no effort, you know the things that have to be done. Here's the things that have to be done. And you just put it away and you say, well, this is what happens. Well, that's what's going to happen. Those things aren't going to get done. Dr. Evans, who was the president of our Bible college, my wife and I went to, used to say this, those who fail to plan, plan to fail. In other words, what he's saying is this, if you know these things are coming your way and you're not going to do anything to do any planning or any scheduling, let me tell you what you're planning to do. You're planning to fail at those things. You're not taking any initiative or thought about these things. So why is this excuse not valid here in verse 19? Think about what he's saying. I bought 5 yoke of oxen and I go to prove them. This man's proving of his oxen showed a lack of planning on his part. So let's just talk again for a second. You're going to go out and, okay, I'm going to expose your personal business. Bill is talking about buying a truck for everyone in the church. Is that what you said? Not quite, was it? He's planning on getting a truck, another truck, a newer one, for his business. Now, here's what, if he said, called up and just said, oh yeah, just send me the old truck over here and I'll pay for it and I'll see if I like it or not. You'd say, Bill, you might want to go check it first. Before you put any money down, see if you really want that truck. It may not be the, isn't that how, would that one, would you tell him that? Yeah, you say, go check it first. This man bought 5 yoke of oxen and said, I bought them, I better check and see if they're worth the money I paid for them. You didn't check ahead of time? Really? You just bought 5 yoke of oxen and now they're here they are? Typically, you don't return animals after you bought them. You buy them, and because once you're on your property, you know, if I sold them to you, I have no idea what you did to them. So I'm going to say, no, they're yours. You paid it, and they're yours. You do whatever you want. Cut off them and eat them. I don't care, but they're not coming back here. So he failed to prove them prior to his purchase, which is typically when you would prove them. Also notice this. It's supper time. You don't try to prove the animals at night. You would do that in the morning when they're fresh, when it's light outside, and when you have all day to do it. It made no sense to do it at supper time. So the excuse had no validity really to it. Now, maybe he, and this is what I think, he didn't plan on proving them. And all of a sudden, now I got 5 yoke of oxen, it's nighttime, and what am I going to do? I better go and check on them. Well, you failed to think ahead of time and plan, and now here it is. And thirdly, he failed to prove them in light of his other commitments. He knew this supper was coming. He knew he was invited. He knew that he needed to plan to be there, but he did no planning, no scheduling, and now everything is coming at one time. And I understand sometimes that happens. Sometimes you can't help it. I understand that. But that's not the case here. The case here is he knew he needed to do this. He knew it was going to happen, and he made no planning, no schedule. So what does that mean? Well, a well-functioning home requires proper planning and scheduling. And that is a true statement. The lack of that planning and scheduling is not a reasonable excuse for that failure. Because everything failed because you put no effort into the planning and scheduling. That's not an excuse, that's you. Now, you may use an excuse, but it's really you. Success happens on purpose, not by luck or chance. Because of that, be careful that if there is failure, it's not just happen. No, sometimes failure is happenstance. Things just happen. Okay, that's different. Okay, but if it's not, you have to be careful that it's not happenstance, but it's just simply a lack of planning. That's what we be careful of. So what else would we think about this? Well, again, thinking within our homes, we need to consider all of the commitments we have as a home and then plan on how to meet them. When our kids were young, our 5 kids were pretty close in age, so they're all basically young at the same time. And Saturday night was Sunday morning. Can you imagine getting 5 kids ready for Sunday morning? And a lot of times, because of my responsibilities, I was leaving early, going out in bus routes or whatever it was, so my wife had to do a lot Sunday morning, a lot of times by herself. Now, let me tell you, when do you start getting kids ready for Sunday morning? Guess when? Saturday night. Of 3 weeks prior. Yes. So my wife would have all the clothes laid out, all the shoes, everything right where she could get to. It's all, this is what they're wearing. It's all clean. It's all ready for. Now, it's still not perfect because you know what little kids like to do. You dress them. You know what they like to do? Undress themselves. They can't dress themselves, but they can undress themselves real well. Okay, and so it is still a challenge. I understand that. Let me tell you, if you go on a bus route in the winter and knock on a door that you visited Saturday so they know you're coming there to pick them up and watch the kids scramble to get ready. They can't find their coats. They can't find their shoes. And they come out wearing some other kid's clothes, some other kid's shoes, some other kid's coat. And sometimes you're waiting, and they're like, And they come out, no coat on, and they're like, I can't find a coat. Well, it's middle of the winter, you got to get a coat on. And they'll come in a coat sometimes three times too big for them. Now, I'm not picking on the kids. I'm saying, obviously, you can tell there's no planning ahead of time. Now, I'm glad the kid comes, but the parent should have put some effort into planning. And so we plan. We want a schedule. We don't want to simply make an excuse and say, well, you know, we just had a hard time this morning. Well, you kind of failed Saturday night, not Sunday morning. Same thing about being somewhere. You know, if you've got to be somewhere and it's 15 minutes away, did I tell you how much I love you lately? I have great love, compassion for you. If you got, if okay, it's 8, it's 7:45 right now. If I had to be somewhere at 8, and I know it's 15 minutes away, I don't know about you, but right now I'd be in full panic mode. I mean, I would be, I'd run into my car, because if I got to be somewhere in 15 minutes, I only allot 15 minutes to get somewhere that's 15 minutes away, I guarantee you, you're going to be late. And you say, well, yeah, I left in time. You didn't really leave in time. You planned to be late because you didn't make any, it's not going to be perfect. The light's going to be too long. Someone's going to cut you off. You know, the person, you're in a 50 miles an hour and there's always a person who wants to do 20 or there's a train or there's road work or there's traffic. There's always reasons. There's always hiccups. Let me show you an example of what I mean by this. And I think I skipped one. I did. Okay. Maybe we'll get back to it. Exodus 32. There was an example for the first one. I got too carried away and didn't give it to you. Let's give you a biblical example for this one. Exodus 32. Here's a good example of things happening and you're like, oh, I don't know. It just happened. I had nothing to do with it. No, you had a lot more to do with it than you're fessing up to. Exodus 32. Look at me in verse 20. So Moses is on the mountain. He comes down. He finds him dancing around naked around a golden calf. He finds out that Aaron, his good old older brother, his right-hand man, is the one who made the golden calf. So here we pick it up in verse 20. He took the calf, which they had made, and burned it. This is Moses. Burned it in the fire and ground it to powder and strawed it upon the water and made the children of Israel drink of it. And Moses said to Aaron, what did this people unto thee that thou brought so great sin upon them? Did they put you in a headlock? Did they put a gun to your head? What? How did they force you to do this? And Aaron said, let not the anger of my Lord wax hot. Thou knowest the people that they are set on mischief. True. For they said unto me, make us gods which shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we not what has become of him. Now notice his excuse. And I said unto them, whosoever hath any gold, let him break it off. So they gave it me, and I cast it in the fire, and there came out this calf. I had nothing to do with it. We just put a bunch of gold in the fire, and boop, there it was. What he's missing out is between all the gold melting and all of the work that went into making it into a golden calf. There's a lot of planning, a lot of work that went into that, but it's the wrong planning and the wrong work. So we have to understand that we can't simply say, well, I don't know, it just happened. No, we have a responsibility to plan and to schedule in our homes so they are what they're supposed to be. We got it as a mom, as a dad, as children, as spouses. Okay, there is planning and scheduling that has to go on. Let's look at the third excuse, back to Luke 14. So these are unreasonable excuses. They didn't have to be. They could have kept their commitments. And we can keep our commitments. Put the right priorities. Do some planning and scheduling. Chapter 14, look with me in verse 20. And another said, I have married a wife, and therefore I cannot come. And all the guys said, amen. Now, but that's an unreasonable, invalid excuse. It is not his wife's fault that he's not keeping his commitment. And really, of all the three excuses, I think this guy is the most spineless. Well, you know, I would do it, but my wife, you know, if it wasn't for my wife. No, you're not doing it because you're not doing it. Just man up and do what you're supposed to do. Quit trying to blame your wife for your weakness. is unreasonable for him to blame his wife. He either made the commitment going to that supper, because remember, they had already been invited. So he either made the commitment, I'll go to the supper, knowing that he was going to get married. He already knew these two things. Or when he got married, he knew that he was supposed to go to the supper. One way or the other, these two commitments had a connection. So there's no reason for him not to keep the commitment. Now watch this. Nor is there a reason he could not bring his wife to the supper. There's nothing to stop him from bringing his wife. It's not like a men's only party. Okay, it's a big supper, a great supper. So there's no reason he could not have gone to the supper. He knew about it, and there's no reason he could not bring his wife. Now, can you think of anyone else who did something like this, who pointed to his wife? Does that ring a bell about anyone? Adam. God says, Adam, what'd you do? Look at her. Don't blame me. It's her. Can I ask you this? Who did God blame? Adam. Because Adam had a responsibility. And he was not going to get out of it by putting it on his wife. Well, how do you know that? Well, let's see. You're in Luke 14. Go to 1 Timothy chapter 2. 1 Timothy chapter 2. So we got to prioritize in our homes. We got to plan and schedule inside our homes. I didn't give you the third point yet. I'll give it to you here. 1 Timothy chapter 2. And let's see what the Bible says. Look with me at verse 14. And Adam was not deceived. In other words, he knew exactly what was happening. But the woman being deceived was in the transgression. In other words, she was deceived in that transgression, but not Adam. Adam wasn't deceived in his transgression. He knew exactly what he's doing. God's holding him responsible. Go look with me at Romans 5. Romans chapter 5. Verse 12. Now, Genesis 3 is where it happens, if you want to look at it later. Romans 5, verse 12. Notice the assignment of blame here. Wherefore, as by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin, and so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned. He puts it on man, Adam. Adam's the one, and there's other verses as well. I'll let you look those up. It talks about in Adam all sinned. So there's no different than what Adam did when he sinned. So what is my main point? Number three is this. Trying to blame others for our own faults is an unreasonable excuse. Now, there may be times when actions of others create problems for us, and those times can be often. Yet we should not use others as a scapegoat for our own lack of responsibility to our commitments. Just fess up, take responsibility. Don't just keep pointing at everyone else. Our homes will only succeed if each person takes responsibility for that success, regardless what others in the home may or may not be doing. We can't wait until everyone else is doing their job before we decide to do our job. As long as we're using others as an excuse, we will not truly take responsibility for the success of our homes. Because you can always find someone to blame. In every home, there's plenty of people to blame for why things don't turn out the way they should. What we need is people to take responsibility and say, no, I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do. And if I don't, it's on me. Homes fail because those in the homes want to make excuses for not fulfilling their responsibility. The husband wants to blame the wife. The wife wants to blame the husband. The children want to blame the parents. Now, the end result is there are commitments that are unkept. There are responsibilities unfulfilled, and everyone has some excuse to justify the failure. And that becomes now an enemy of that home, these excuses, because we're using excuses, not doing what we're supposed to be doing. Now, let me repeat what I said early on. No home is perfect. Okay? People will fail, and excuses will have to be given. I'm not trying to be unreasonable in this. Okay, I'm not trying to say, you know, there's never an excuse. You always got to do what you're supposed to do. Okay, I'm not trying to be... There's plenty of times when I've had great intentions and I've fallen flat on my face and said, oops, didn't happen the way I thought would happen. Okay, let's get up. Let's try it again. Okay, that's understandable. As long as the excuses are reasonable and there is a general attitude of responsibility, then the occasional excuses are not the problem. I hope we don't expect everyone in our homes to be perfect. Because we're not and they're not. But we're talking about not taking responsibility and coming up with all these lame excuses for it. That's the problem. And that's the enemy. But unreasonable excuses because of a lack of responsibility to our commitments are unacceptable by the Lord and are hurtful to our homes. So we need to deal with these foolish excuses. All right. Let's get ready to pray, and then we'll be dismissed. Now, Father,